Welcome back, everyone. We're having a fascinating look inside the mafia, how things operate, with former mob associate named, at least his name back then, was Tony Nastasi. He's got a new name now. He's got a new hometown. He's laying low, basically, because he agreed to cooperate with the FBI. And then his name was made public, and that cooperation was made public as a result of this weird little side incident involving Sean Puffy Combs and Jennifer Lopez. And that really changed your life, didn't it, Tony?
Yeah, it did, yeah.
Did they come after you? I mean, it seemed like you had told me a story before that they sent some people to your mom's house looking for you.
Yeah, that's sort of, they sent some guys over there, you know, and they intimidated my mother. I mean, you know, and she was 93 at the time. I mean, you know, that's what I'm saying. I mean, you know. They lost everything that they used to have. There was no honor anymore. There was no rules to be set or anything. They never did that years ago. Don't intimidate somebody's mother. That shows you the kind of mutts that are out there now.
But you declined to enter witness protection, even though you know that they'd wish you ill, wouldn't they?
Well, yeah, I declined because I was taking care of my mom at the time. I moved her out of there because I didn't want no problems with her there anymore. And they wanted to put me in witness protection program. And like I said, the guys that I worked with, the feds that I worked with out in Vegas, they were racist, those guys, and they stuck by me right till this day, you know. And I think one of them is listening right now. He knows who he is. And I have the highest regard for the guy because he was there, took my back all the way. You know, and when I told him what went on in New York with the feds and everything else, he told me, you know, what he said was, well, hey, different levels of service from different branches. You know, and I said, well, okay, fine. I'm glad I'm with the right guys now. And he said, what you got to do is you got to go through the motions with the U.S. Marshals, okay, first, okay, and turn it down, and then we'll do something else. We'll try to work something else out for you. I said, okay, because they really appreciated me and what I did and everything else, and, you know, I went the whole nine yards for them. You know, that's the first bit of appreciation I got from any of this nonsense. So anyway, I met with the U.S. Marshal. She was about maybe, I don't know, 25, maybe 27 years old. Told me she was doing this for 5 years. I says, yeah, okay. And she told me how old she was. And I said, well, you know, something, I got underwear older than that. You know, you sure you know what you're doing? And then she throws all these different pamphlets at me with the rules and where you got to go and this and that. I said, I can't uproot my mother again. She's 93 years old. And at that time, I got a dog for my mother because she really liked the dog. Then they told me I had to get rid of the dog, too. He says, you know what, honey? He says, look, take all your travel brochures and take it on a hop back to L.A., okay? Because I don't need you. Oh, what do you mean? We came all the way out here for nothing. I says, yeah, well, have a nice trip back. What can I tell you? You know?
So you turned down witness protection. That means basically...
I told him to, you know, the U.S. attorney was there, too, at the time. And I told him what he could do and where he could go and what he could do when he gets there, so...
But the result of that is that you're out there pretty much all on your own. You got nobody to protect you.
I was pretty much out there. You know, all my
own. You know, it's been a couple of years since this stuff happened. You said, you know, we did a couple of stories with you last month, and
right.
And I'm sure you're pretty sure the guys back east would know about that.
Am I sure they know about it?
Yeah.
Oh, they definitely know about it. Yeah.
And is there some concern that they're looking for you?
Well, they're simmering right now. You know, they take their time. They simmer. They get themselves all worked up into a frenzy until they get really pissed off. And, you know, they'll find somebody, you know, that wants to make their bones, you know, and they'll feel that they want to finish a job that they should have finished. You know?
Well, we got to tell you to be careful there, Tony. Are you ready to go to the phones and hear some questions from our listeners?
Yeah, sure, George.
All right, let's give it a try. We're going to go to our wild card line, Bruce in Modesto, California. What's on your mind?
Yes, sir. First off, I'm fairly honored for a gentleman that has come up through the streets and chit-chatting with you, sir. Second of all, you have to understand I have 11 years with the federal government, indirectly some of it in intelligence, and there was a rumor kicking around that some of these radical Muslims in this country war going on with the inside the U.S., and that I'm sure the families would turn to their government contacts to eliminate this problem. Have you ever heard of such a rumor?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Nope, I haven't heard that one either. Bruce, you've heard that from government people?
Friends of friends, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's we have a few things wandering around besides a few other things that. So it's sort of interesting, but sort of worries people that that they could have this internal war.
Well, that is interesting. I'll tell you what, Bruce, if you get any more solid info on it, let me know. Thanks for calling. We're going to go to our wild card two line. Charlie in Lubbock, Texas. Good morning, Charlie.
How are you?
Okay.
I got a just kind of a two-part question. It's pretty short. Just without putting you in any danger or getting too specific, what have you been doing now, and how was the transition into basically a whole new lifestyle?
Well, you're Charlie, right?
Yeah.
All right, Charlie. I'll tell you what. If I had it, to be honest with you, you know, because this is what I am, in spite of what my past dictates.
Yeah.
If I had, you know, I developed a conscience in a business where you should have none. And if I had to go through everything I had to go through again, I would have probably turned a blind eye to things, and I would have probably let the ball roll and go with the way they wanted it to go. To be honest with you, yeah. All the, you know, I wasn't looking to be a hero or anything. I just got sick to my stomach, and I got fed up. And that's why I went the route I did. Plus the fact that they were trying to off me, too. That sort of made me go that way, too. But that was created by me because I didn't want to go their way in the first place. Okay? Mm-hmm. But if I had to do it all over again, you know, I lost a lot. You know? The feds in New York, they left me out in the cold. I was working for them. They let me get prosecuted by the state. And didn't step in, all right? Pretty much lost a lot monetarily, lost a lot, all right? Lost family that don't talk to me anymore, okay? So if I had to do it all over again, there were no rewards there, all right? It was downhill since. Now, since, you know, I'm climbing my way out right now. But, you know, the best thing to do is never to get into that life in the first place, but, you know, when you're young, you're subject to the stupidity of youth.
Hey, Charlie, I don't think he can say too much about what he's doing now. At least I couldn't get it out of him either. So, but thank you for the calls. Thanks for. Go ahead.
Thanks for letting me on. I didn't figure he could, but you know, right. So I thought I'd ask anyways.
All right. Thank you for calling. And we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back with more of your questions for our guest, Tony Nastasi. Stick around. I'm George Knapp on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm George Knapp. We're taking questions for our guest, a former mob associate whose name used to be Tony Nastasi. It's different now. He's sort of gone underground for reasons that we've been discussing this evening. Going to go back to the lines now. East of the Rockies, Eddie in Providence. I think I've read that Providence may have had some organized crime stuff over the years back in that neck of the woods, right?
Yes.
What's your question for Tony?
Hi, Tony. How are you?
How you doing, Eddie?
Good. Tony, you seem to be an honest mobster. I never really met one, only in the movies. Like you say, it's entertainment. I think
living
tomorrow I'm feeling my
Providence, Jetty, and you never met anybody.
I wanted to ask you, over the years, talking to mobsters, was the mob behind the killing of JFK?
Hey, you know, I was 10 years old when that happened, so... You know, I remember hearing about it like everybody else. I was in school, you know, in grammar school, as a matter of fact. And I could, you know, I have my doubts about that, you know, but I don't think so, Eddie. No, I really don't believe that. No.
We've all heard those stories over the years, though.
Yeah, we have. It's, you know, the stories are great. You know, that's how Paul Bunyan got to be as big as he was.
But you've never heard any stories from mob associates that would indicate that?
Oh, I know some old-timers, too. The guy who was my mentor was an old-timer. He went back to the 30s and the 40s. And, you know, I mean, he even knew Joe Valachi personally before Joe Valachi turned, who was one of the first turncoats. And he knew all those guys. I mean, you know, you never heard anything with it, you know. never heard, you know.
Okay.
I've only heard the rumors that everybody else have heard, and, you know.
Well, maybe they wouldn't have told you even if they knew.
Well,
thanks.
The rumors I heard, too, if that was true, you know, that action came out of the Chicago outfit.
Right.
Know.
So. Thanks, Eddie. Appreciate the call. We're going to go to Mark here in my hometown of Las Vegas on Wildcard Line. Mark, good morning.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
Well, I have a question. This isn't directly related to the mob. This is more related to government observation and intimidation. And I know that your guest may not be able to answer it, but the question is... when it comes to just a regular citizen doing something that they believe is within the limits of the law, and then government agents come up to them and they intimidate them, and then they're told by other authorities, that what these government officials did was outside of the bounds of the law, what does your guest think about how this person should react? Should they just, like, quiver and cower and hide?
Or are you talking about yourself, Mark? Are you talking about yourself? Somebody,
yes.
Who's hassling you?
I took some pictures. I was up near on BLM land, which is public government land, near Nellis Air Force Base, and I was taking some pictures of fighter jets, which is anyone can do in Las Vegas because the Nellis Air Force Base is right there. But there happened to be a police shooting range, and a couple of police officers, and one officer with a ICE, which is the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, came up, and then after they harassed me, they quote-unquote trespassed me, which means that they had given me due notice that where I was not allowed to be. But I talked to the mayor of the city on a radio show the next day, and he told me I was within my rights. And you know, this is not related to the mob, but this is related to federal police kind of intimidation. And what is your guess? The recommendation as far as whether or not someone should just like steer clear, or should they stand up for their rights?
Thanks for the call there, Mark. Tony, you've had a lot of experience with police and with federal agents, and your experience is they pretty much can do whatever they want. At least some of them did, right?
Well, on the local level, if you're talking local cops, you know, and I'm not talking, don't get me wrong, I'm not talking the young guys that get out of the academy and they're patrolling the streets, they're all gung-ho, they're full of vinegar and salt and ready to go. You know, I'm talking about the seasoned cops that work their way into details, like the Vice Squad and so forth, or the Public Moral Squad, or whatever they want to call themselves, coast to coast. And there's a lot of corruption there, and they will use not only intimidation, in my own personal experience, they will use physical violence if they have to. So, which is wrong, you know. But on the other hand, on the federal level, okay, I found them nothing to be but perfect gentlemen. In fact, I mean, John Gotti even said it himself. You know, every time they came to arrest him, they addressed him as Mr. Gotti, and they walked him out, and they told him, I mean, they did things like the Department of Justice, they do things like gentlemen. They don't really try to intimidate you in that way, or they don't try to, in my own experience, they don't try, and other guys that I know, their experience. You know, it's cut and dry. They come, they tell you what you're charged with, you come, you know, and that's it. You know.
And what would you suggest to Mark here in his situation? Any advice?
No, Mark, I don't know what you're dealing with there. You said you're on BLM land. I guess that's state land. I don't know why the federal police were involved there. It should have been, I guess, the state police.
No, it is federal land. BLM would be public.
Oh, it is federal land?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
And it's federal police. All right. These are uniformed cops, I guess. Hello?
I think Mark is gone, but I think they were probably. Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, Mark is gone.
Well,
I think probably they were.
I mean, cops are flesh and blood. They're human beings, just like anybody else, subject to the same emotions that other human beings had. The same greed. Well, you know, it's a matter of controlling things, you know, in your life and in yourself. You know, but you're all subject to the same feelings. So I don't know what happened to him. I don't know, you know. Could I believe that happened? Yeah, I could. Should he stand up? Yeah, well, you could stand up, but you're going to take a beating. You're going to take a beating. If not physically, you're going to take a beating in the system. Okay?
Right. Okay. Tony, we're going to try to take one more call before our next break. East of the Rockies, John. Good morning, John.
Yes. In the 60s, my car broke down. I got a ride with a gentleman. Let's call him Tony. He was a sniper in the Korean War. And we had a nice conversation. And he told me that his sister was had been seeing somebody that his father didn't like, so that gentleman had one of his eyes put out. I told him there was something going on, and that there was going to be an attempt to try to straighten out America, and there was possibly a chemist, a professor at the University of Chicago, who was going to make some agents that could help in the effort. He looked at me. I don't think he really wanted to let me out of his car, but I did bail out at a stop sign. About a week later, that chemist had his wrists cut in the University of Chicago. Do you know about that, sir?
No, I don't know about too many things in Chicago. I was in Chicago three times in my life. And one of them was just to stop at Midway Airport to change to another plane. No, that I don't know anything about. I'm sorry.
John, thank you for that call. Maybe you can send me an email about that. I'm kind of interested in getting a little more information on it. Hey, Tony, before we go back to the phones, there, Amy Fisher, Joey Buttafuoco, they somehow came into your life, didn't they? Didn't Amy Fisher write something about you?
Well, no, Amy Fisher didn't. The woman who wrote a book, Sheila Weller, put me in the book because of my contact and an associate's contact with what we would call him was Joey Coco Pops. Turned out to be Joey Buttafuoco.
Well, was he trying to muscle in on the escort service business or something?
He was working for this woman in Long Island who had an escort agency, and she was dating the chief of police. And that's why nothing ever happened to her escort agency, because Long Island was pretty tough to actually operate out of. They were pretty, you know, pretty stringent on closing places down. But she worked in a small town on Long Island, and of course she was dating the chief of police. She wasn't closed down. She used Joey Buttafuoco because he was mesmerized by the industry, like a buff, you know, and he liked young girls, you know. And what he would do is he wound up meeting with her. I think she had a car fixed at his place or something. He had an auto body shop, auto repair shop or something. And she got into conversations with him, and he said he could supply her with young girls and this and that, you know. And they entered into, like, he became a canvasser for her to find girls, you know. But like his big mouth, you know, he never really had the girls. So he'd go out and search for girls. What he did was drivers and escorts in the city used to, like, congregate at certain diners, certain, like, convenience stores and hang out. You know what I'm saying? Get coffee,
yeah.
Hang out. And there'd be a few of them there, you know, there'd be known spots. And he managed to find out because she, you know, he did know her, and she did run escorts, and she was able to tell him where some of the spots were, especially in Queens. And he would go there and hand out his card with a number on it to call him. You know, he would go to different cars, you know, as blatant as he was. The driver would be sitting there, and he'd go in there, and he'd tell the girls, oh, you can make more money working for this place here. Give us a call, you know, and this kind of stuff.
Hey, Tony, we're going to take a short break. Joey Buttafuoco, man, you've met some interesting people in your life. Stick around, everyone. We'll be back with more of your questions for Tony Nastassi. I'm George Knapp on Coast to Coast AM. We're heading into the home stretch, everyone, with our guest, Tony Nastassi, who's led an interesting life. He's not here selling a book or a movie. No such projects are in the works, although I'll tell you what, it's in light of all the encounters and adventures he's had with the likes of Vinnie Aspirins and the Angel of Death, it would make a heck of a movie. It'd make a heck of a book. And maybe Tony should think about those projects somewhere along the line. It's different. It's a different story from other mobsters turned informants because he didn't get busted for anything. Nobody forced him into the situation. He looked around himself and didn't like what he saw, and that's why he decided to cooperate with the FBI, a decision that he now regrets because it's totally turned his life upside down. We're going to take a break now. When we come back, our final segment and more of your questions for Tony Nastassi. I'm George Knapp on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM, everyone. We have a few minutes left with our guest, the mob associate formerly known as Tony Nastassi, and we're going back to the phones. Our first-time caller list, Jim, south of the border. Where are you? Jim?
Hey, this is Jimmy. Hey, I'm in Rosarito, in Baja.
Okay, what's on your mind?
Okay, hey, I got a question for Tony here. How you doing, Tony?
How are you?
All right. Hey, you know, with that one call girl that Spitzer was going out with, I read on a website, crispy.org, with an E, that, you know, that she was recruited, you know, that she was forcefully recruited as a call girl, and, you know, that she grew up and that the mob guys look for girls that are in broken homes and get these girls to work as call girls because, you know, they, you know, like after the, you know, like we got a rogue mafia here, the family court judges, and, you know, they go and break up these homes, and then it makes it easier for these girls to get recruited in because, you know, dad's been out of the house. They never see the dad or anything. So what is this thing? Is this what is really going on, or how do you see it, Tony?
Well, how I see it with Ms. Dupree, okay, is that she was not forced. I know that for a fact. All right, she worked for a guy who I happen to know who was busted in 2004. She started working for him first. In fact, he happened to be on the news just the other day telling the story. Okay, he did approach her, okay, and ask her if she wanted to work. He gave her his card, and she called. She came to him of her own free will. All right, and then there's a perfect example of a girl was actually trying to use this as a stepping stone. She was trying to promote a singing career, from what I understand, okay, and trying to use this as a stepping stone. She had no part of this, believe me, I'm sure of that. In fact, what I understand is she didn't even know that she was seeing the governor in New York when she saw him. Didn't even know who he was, okay, just a client. And she was pretty much using this business as a stepping stone. She's in the, you know, she's not what I'd refer to as a career working girl. She's 22 years old, and she was trying to promote a singing career. Now, I don't know, you know, I have my qualms about whether this is going to help her or not in that venue, you know, a singer being an ex-working girl. I don't know if that's going to help her, but I know Larry Flint has already made her an offer, so maybe she should take it. So.
Thanks for that call, Jim. Tony, in general, though, the premise that he had there that girls end up in that business that you used to be involved in because they come from broken homes and bad situations, that's
you'll find that a lot of these girls do have issues. Yes, I agree with you. There are girls out there, right, that have too many issues. You're not going to cure them. It's like a cancer. It's incurable. They're going to be what they are. They're going to be what they are forever. But
any
there are the ones that have gone out there. I mean, I've met them. I know them. And they've gone out there and they've used this as a medium just to get to where they want to get, to their goal in life. All right?
Any other perspective on the Emperor Room and Elliot Spitzer and all that stuff from where you sit? How do you see that whole story?
Well, Elliot Spitzer came after me. He was going to be the new Thomas E. Dewey. And he came after me, and, you know, he was, you know, holistically, he was high up there on the ladder and was against prostitution and against this and against everything. And, you know, everybody likes to see the tormentor. I guess I like to, too. I guess I'm glad that this came to light in a way, you know. But one thing I can say I never was a hypocrite. I knew what I was, and I know what I am, and I don't deny it. It's the guys like him that disgust me, that don't, you know, that hide behind their public office and then run around like the way they do, and guys that, you know, that steal and carry badges, too. You know, same principle.
Tell me this. When you were in that business, did you have politicians as customers, police, federal
absolutely.
Folks?
Absolutely. Judges.
Judges.
Family court judges, district court judges, yeah. High profile attorneys. Yeah. Yep. Did a bachelor party for the DA in Queens.
I'm sure they're pleased to hear that on the radio.
No, well, they can hear what they want. They know it's true. I mean, you know, they know who I'm talking about. And it's no longer the DA anymore, but this was back in the day. And they know, you know.
All right. We're going to go back to the phone, our wild card line, John in New Mexico. Good morning, John.
Hey, Tony, you know the difference between the government and the mafia?
I don't know. Is this a joke, John? Go ahead.
Yeah, it's a joke, but it's true. One's legal, one's illegal. You figure out which one.
Well, I gave up.
They all collect taxes. You know, they all take things from against your will. They all got their judges and their thieves and their murderers. They're the same thing, except for, like I said, one's on top, one's on the bottom.
Well, yeah. All I can say is, John, there are no white hats and there are no black hats. Everything's pretty gray to me. So, you know.
Thanks, John. That was a cool call there. Wildcard line, Leo in Fort Worth, Texas. Good morning, Leo.
Hey, thanks for taking the call. A really great show, and I was sitting here listening to it, and just the details of how you don't seem starstruck, and just the way that you describe things and everything are just got me to thinking. And I was thinking about how, you know, there's like this idea out there that people that live your type of lifestyle, Tony, that come from where you came from and experience what you do through in your shoes, kind of look out at the rest of us here in the world and, you know, maybe some of us that try to play by the rules or, you know, nobody's perfect. But and there's like this idea that there's this veil over our eyes. You guys see things a lot more clear how they really, really work. And I would be interested in hearing you elaborate on that and kind of, you know, what are some things from your perspective come from where you've come from that we should see that we don't because we're just too busy trying to, you know, work and pay our taxes and all of this stuff. I mean, I really would be interested in hearing some of your thoughts on that.
Thanks, Leo. Thanks for that question. Tony?
All right, Leo. I guess what you want to know is if connected guys, how they look at the... You know,
okay.
The rest of the public that is supposed to be honest and everything else.
I think Leo's gone there, Tony. Yeah, so
the,
yeah,
the attitude of them is that you're a bunch of jerks. I mean, you know, that's not my particular attitude right now. I'm just giving it overall that the working stiff is a moron. You know, why work? You know, I mean, it's not yours if you don't take it. You know, and that's the way they think. You know, they don't work for nothing. There are guys out there that never worked a day in their life. They wouldn't know what a callus looked like. I mean, you know, and they think that anybody that swings a pick or that works a jackhammer or works in an office, you know, they're just they're what they call the square people. You know, they don't know what's going on. They're oblivious to what's going on around them. You know, and they're pigeons to these guys. They're there to be taken. They can't be conned out of or sucked in. You know how many legitimate businesses we've got involved with these guys and got busted out and got destroyed, got eaten up? You know, I mean, that's what they think of you. Yeah, that's what the mob thinks. The mob, the connected guys out there, the straightened out guys, that's what they think.
Okay. You know, thanks for that call, Leo. And we're going to our wild card line, Huey in Queens. This sounds like my call from back in your neck of the woods, Tony. Huey, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I just got two quick questions. In what part of in the mob, do you think that the mob has done the most damage as far as American society, the most damage and the most influence?
In what areas?
Total, because, you know, you had the taxes with the, you know, they always say that everything that you do in New York City, especially, that the mob has a little hand, you know, used to have a hand in, you know, putting up a building, yeah, taxing on your gas and whatnot.
Not to mention the garbage industry. I mean,
exactly. I mean, what's the most damage that the mob has done to the American society, and what? Where's the biggest influence?
Well, you know, I mean, there's that old story that everything that they do that the general public winds up paying for in one way or another. You know, you're asking a guy who was part of that and didn't really care who paid, you know, as long as I got paid. All right. That's all I cared about. That's all the guys out there that are left out there care about. So, I mean, as far as if we ever thought about, I'm sure it did damage in many different industries. I mean, industries that I know of, the construction industry, the garbage industry. I mean, you know, unions. I mean, you know, I mean, I was on free medical with the Teamsters Union, the local, right there back in New York. I mean, I was getting free. I'm sure somebody had to pay for that. You know, I didn't. You know, so it does damage. I guess it does damage all the way around. Anything that they can get involved in, anything they can squeeze a dollar out of. Mostly, they're interested in cash businesses, where cash can disappear.
Well, and that's exactly the reason why, although our city fathers here in Las Vegas, my town, they like to say that the mob is gone, but this is a cash town. It's hard to believe they'd ever be gone completely. Thanks for that call. We're going to go now to our international line, Mike in Toronto. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. What actor would you like to play Tony, or what actor would you like to see play you, Tony, in a Hollywood movie, dead or alive, or past or present?
Actually, I happen to be, he's a Chicago boy, but I happen to be fond of the guy. I think he's a very underrated actor. But it's Dennis Farina, I think. You know, maybe he's a little older right now, but I think he's got the punch that could probably carry it off anyway with his actions and the way he does things. You know?
Yeah, you remember him. You remember Dennis Farina, don't you, Mike? I guess Mike's gone. Yeah, that'd be, that's pretty cool. That would be a good idea. He's certainly an accomplished actor, and he's got the whole mannerism thing down. We're going to go east of the Rockies. Will in San Antonio. Good morning.
Yeah, one of the cool things about the mob to me, at least entertainment-wise, was the nicknames. And I always wondered if you're allowed to come up with your own nickname when you join, or does someone else have to assign you a nickname?
You would wind up with a nickname. I mean, it could be, you know, sometimes the media would hang something on you, you know. I mean, you know, and sometimes it would stick, sometimes it wouldn't. The real reason that they came up with nicknames, okay, is because, I mean, there were guys out there that know each other for 20 years and they still don't know each other's last name. It's funny, yeah, it is, but it's true. I mean, you know, I deal with guys, money's changing hands left and right, and they still don't know the guy's last name. Now, the reason for that was a device where they couldn't pinpoint you. If there were wiretaps, if you called the guy up, you know, you asked for Joey Bubbles, or you asked for this guy, you know, and, you know, that would sort of like confuse them in the wiretaps. They, you know, it would sound like, you know, a bunch of cartoon characters getting together, you know, and there were some wild names out there. I mean, you know, we used to call a guy, his name used to be Ralphie Shoes. Now, the reason he got that name is because he was so smooth. He could talk your shoe. He could talk your socks off without taking your shoes off.
And Tony,
by
the way, well, that's a good question, Will. And Tony actually got a nickname put on him by media, but it didn't stick. It was Tony the Butcher, right?
Yeah. That was one of the overzealous columnists back in New York that did that. It didn't stick though.
Well, good. That's a spooky one there. We're going to go west of the Rockies. George in Medford, Oregon. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. My question, I got a couple of them here that are real, throw them at you real quick. How dispersed at the height of the heyday, even today? I mean, we always hear about St. Louis and Miami and Chicago and New York, but is the mob in Medford, Oregon? Are they in Portland, Oregon? Are they in Orem, Utah? Or do they leave those places alone? Is there, if they find a little operation, do they go in for an opportunity? And the other thing, the other question, are they heavily involved in the automobile industry, the car dealerships? And last but not least, where does the Irish and the Jewish mob fit in within the Italian structure?
That's a lot of questions there. My area was the New York area, okay? You know, it's like, you know, you've got different, you know, spokes of a wheel, you know, it's not even that way too. I mean, you know, you watch the movies and stuff and it looks like, you know, that the wealth is shared nationwide. Well, it's not. I mean, there's too much greed in local areas to share anything with New York, to share anything with Chicago, or to share it with Miami or New Orleans or any place like that. Okay. They, you know, they may know each other. They may call upon each other for a favor now and then. But they all eat in their own cities. And nothing is shared, really, outside the crews of that particular city. All right. Now, the other question is,
are they in small towns, smaller towns?
Not really. No. If this, I mean, you're not going to find them in, you know, you're not going to find them out in the farmland somewhere. There's no money to be earned out there. What are they going to do? All right. You can't run an illegal crap game in a cornfield. You know what I'm saying? Nobody's going to come.
This guy was calling from Medford, Oregon. I don't know if you've ever been to Medford, but...
I don't think he has anything to worry about. I don't think they're there.
He also asked about Jewish and Irish mobs and whether or not... And I've seen the movies. I've read the books. There has been cooperation between both of those groups and the traditional Italian La Cosa Nostra, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Sure they have. I mean, if you want to go back, you want to go back to the movie Goodfellas. I mean, you know, the guy who played, the real name was Jimmy Burke, of course. I mean, he was an Irishman, you know, and he was with Paulie Vario. I mean, you know, he was somebody who was with somebody. He never went. He knew he could never be a straightened out guy because he was Irish, but he didn't want it. You know, sure there was cooperation. There's many different associates out there. You don't have to be. You know, it's not you don't have to be of Sicilian descent. You don't have to be right out of Palermo, or have descendants to go back. You don't have both sides be Italian. You know, it doesn't have to be that way to be an associate. I mean, they had black number runners up in Harlem that were working. I mean, you know, anybody's allowed to earn. Anybody's allowed out there to earn. As long as they kick back, they don't care who they're getting it from.
All right. I think we might try to slip in one more call. It has to be a quick one, though. Dell in Minnesota on the wild card line. Have to make it short.
Hey, Tony, real quick. You mentioned his name real early in the show, Henry Hill. And I was just wondering if you know what... I just heard some rumors. I actually bought some art from him off of, like, eBay. And I'm just wondering if you know what he's up to now or anything like that.
We got about 30 seconds.
I know the people he was associated with. But I don't know him personally, okay? I knew Olivario's sons from East New York, all right? I knew them. But Mr. Hill, I did not know.
Okay, thanks for that call, Dell. Tony, thanks for sticking it out for the interview, and hope you take care of yourself. And if any big producers or book writers or publishers call me, I'll take down the information, and the next time you contact me, I'll pass it along to you.
Well, that's good. It has plenty of story there, George. A lot of comedy, a lot of drama, and a lot of horror too, and sex. So,
thanks for sticking it out with us here tonight for a fascinating interview. Thanks to all the folks at Coast to Coast, George Norrie and Art Bell, and everybody and the staff, and to all your listeners. Good night, everyone.